Coming up, it's Media Matters with Marie Buskey and Marty Gibson, discussing the media through the RCR lens, right here on Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Reality Check Radio. Thanks, Paul and Rodney, for letting Marty and I steal a little bit of time this morning to wish everybody
Merry Christmas.
I know. Did you know, this is a proper authentic sleigh bell that I got given in North America in 1989. I found it. I had a white Christmas that year, Marty. You spent a lot of time in the Northern Hemisphere. Did you white Christmas it when you were up there?
Yeah, I had a couple of white Christmases.
It is
literally and figuratively.
Oh, the 90s. It was a time, wasn't it?
So much fun, so little poo.
Actually, did you hear about the new report? This is segue straight there since you've started it. It's just come out in the last few days about New Zealanders' recreational drug use.
No.
Oh, apparently Kiwis are very, very fond of popping a wee Ritalin in the morning to get the day going and a wee benzo at night to pop themselves off to bed. You know, not a lot
like
changed.
Housewives.
It's just like those 50s housewives, a little bit of Duramine in the morning to keep them svelte and keep them through the day, and a little mother's little helper washed down with a dry martini to go to bed at night.
Homeostasis is your enemy in drug use. You know, I actually wrote a song called Living on Beer, and the first lines where it starts off as something that makes you feel good, ends up something stops you feeling so bad.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, everything works less except for exercise. And
So the disclaimer now gets inserted that we do not encourage overuse of any alcohol, drug, or illicit activities across the festive period.
But really, are going mainstream.
But anyway, it's great to be back in the last of the year. I'm getting quite excited about the detox, which we both go on across the summer period. But we thought we'd better recap some of the stuff that has gone on. Firstly, you just before we got started, you gave me a walk around the house. The house is looking fabulous. You're almost done, and the chickens look very happy. So a quick report from the Papadopoulos for everybody before we go.
Yeah, no, there's no signs of sniffles breaking out, and I'm managing to limit misinformation among my chickens.
Excellent.
The guinea pigs are valuable new members of the team, and a partridge in a pear tree, as one of the listeners said that was missing from our menagerie.
Exactly. So there has been, of course, lots of things that we've discussed across the year, and we just thought we'd touch on a few of them, and we'd also touch on things looking forward, because I said on the Foundation members call on Sunday night, I'm feeling really hopeful. You know, I've been wading around in this space now since 2018, so I've got through the lens of many years. I've seen a trend, and it's what I'm now seeing is giving me some hope. So I sent you some sort of questions. We don't have to completely stick to these because it's us. We go off beast. But I kind of thought I started off with a few of them. And the first one I had was Christopher Luxon's David Brent moment of the year, because he had a few this year.
Well, it was hard to pick, wasn't it? I mean, I'm wealthy, I'm sorted, you know, which was, to be fair to him, taken out of context by envious, poorly paid media lovies and leftists, threatening to arrest Benjamin Netanyahu. But I thought for Luxon at his purest David Brent, when he was asked, what do you like about the treaty principles? Well, nothing.
Yeah,
what don't you like about everything?
Yeah, that's exactly the moment that I chose to. And I thought Glenn Edward, I was on Political Panel with Glenn last week, Political Agenda, and Glenn summed it up too. He brought that up. He said he didn't need to say that.
Yeah.
He didn't need to say that. He said there were so many other ways that he could have framed it, and he chose not to. Yeah, and to me that just smacks of either, I don't know whether it's frustration or lack of experience, but it's like, oh, oinky darling, you need to get that sorted, I think, for the new year.
Well, it's instructive to listen to Ricky Gervais talk about the character of David Brent, because it does give you some insight. One of the things he says is, you know, I mean, he's a sympathetic character, even though he's so unsympathetic, because he just wants to be liked. He just wants to be liked. And so, you know, and I think there is that insecurity of identity that suits people who go into corporate life, because they can just don an identity. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to an HR lady when I was going for a job with a big chemical company that had an oval logo. And I said, do you enjoy working here? And she just broke into this frightening grin and said, oh, yes, I've got the oval stamp on my forehead. And I think he's like that. It's like, oh, what do good boys think? Oh, good boys are really worried about climate change. Good boys think that, you know, it's silly to worry about men in skirts going getting changed with eight-year-old girls. You're on another planet if you're worried about that. He'll sort of say things and it doesn't really go through a soul.
Mm. Well, he's like that head boy that gets appointed because, you know, his family knows somebody or he's done something somewhere, but he hasn't actually got any leadership skills.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's got management skills, but they're not the same as leadership skills.
But, okay, so let's unpick that thread. Since we're free-flowing this morning, I mean, you've talked about this, Paul. It was one of the highlights of the year, I thought, was when you talked about the Māori skills of management, right? There is a very distinct difference between management and leadership.
Mm.
So then if Christopher Luxon isn't a leader, he's a manager, who's leading the country?
And he's got that slight bent of authoritarianism. And, you know, if you listen to anecdotes of his time at Air New Zealand, you do hear about just appalling aloofness and high-handedness from him. You know, one of the important things about leading people I've found in my time doing it is you've got to customize the way you lead each person to a certain degree or categorize them. And you've got to make it clear in their mind, get a commitment from how they're going to behave. And you've got to tie up in their mind the advantages of what you want them to do in terms of the rest of their life and what they do next. And that's what's missing from Luxon selling what he's doing to New Zealand. As I said, it's all features and no benefits. So, you know, if he could just get in the habit, it's not something that, you know, something that he could intellectually do. Just, you know, when he's talking about ying pitches, rather than trying to sound tough and authoritarian, yeah, just talk about all the people who are victimized by these people. Not only that, talk about the benefits of limiting scumbag behavior, not only for the victims, but for the scumbags themselves.
Mm. Mm.
So, you know, ultimately, it's not a good long-term strategy being a scumbag, corrupting, victimizing people, you know.
No. Yeah, it will be, I think he will find next year quite tough. You know, the first year, I mean, he didn't have a honeymoon period really, but the first year was not the easy ride into the job that I think any new leader will get. And it's only going to, you know, toughen up. And, you know, the books have been cracked and it's not pretty. It's ugly. And he's actually going to have to make not only management decisions, but leadership decisions. And he's going to actually have to stop being such a pussy and find his cojones and actually realize that you're actually a man, sweetie, and you need to actually make some forceful ideas. And you know what? People are not going to like you. I mean, what I read, I don't know whether you saw that post from Annie O'Brien or Nex about the union that apparently made a Luxon pinata.
Yeah, and put it next to a guillotine.
Yeah.
Silence, just crickets from the media.
Media.
I mean, the most memorable political moment of the year is our next category on the Busky roundup. I think overall supreme winner of that is Trump's election, isn't it?
Totally.
And it'll be delicious to see how it ripples, how the ripples from that wash up in New Zealand. And as I've said before, Luxon is only going to look more unprincipled, more wishy-washy, more dabbling around the edges with every bit of news of what's happening in Argentina. It's happening, you know, with Trump's team and Doge. And hopefully it does put some steel in the spine, because
the cultural wind is definitely changing. And the other thing that I also bracketed that with the Trump election, but it's juxtaposed against what's happened in the United Kingdom, because you got an election result in the United Kingdom which came out of 14 years of frustration and apathy, and you then have a government that has gone in on a landslide in terms of Labour, which it wasn't. I mean, he got less votes than Jeremy Corbyn, Keir Starmer. However, the wrath and destruction that has occurred, I mean, I think Keir Starmer is almost up there with Dear Leader of how quickly can you destroy a country when you've got the political mandate to do so.
And when your loyalty is to Davos, as he said, you know, Davos or the UK, who are you more loyal to? Davos, you know, and it just frustrates me. And here, you know, I mean, we're jumping around a bit here, but
that's
what we're going to do. Yeah, they're the political moment of the year. Yeah, Hannah Muppy Clark doing Te Rauparaha's haka in Parliament, and Debbie Ngarewapaka miming shooting David Seymour and one of his colleagues, and Jerry Brownlee being piss weak about it, I think, is the other.
Yeah. And also, you've got to remember Julianne Gentile earlier in the year, she had a little bit of a moment in the House as well. You know, there's been, it has certainly been in the House a lot of left behaving badly. And I think.
Narcissistic rage.
Yeah, and Jerry certainly hasn't been as forceful as I think he could have been. You know, there haven't been enough. You need to go into time out into the naughty corner now, as there should have been.
Well, I think it's because we've become so insipid about the heritage that we've inherited in terms of the Westminster parliamentary system, where part of the copapa of that is we leave weapons outside because it's a parliament, it's a place to parley, it's a place to talk. And so, you know, bringing clubs and you know, bringing war weapons into the House is shitting all over that kopapa. And we've got to reassert the confidence in our culture to say, hey, no, that's politically incorrect, chaps. Mm. And, you know, if you didn't have one of the highest rates in the world of killing children, you know, it might be less offensive.
Mm.
But, you know, maybe practice gardening a little bit more and a little bit less angry intimidation, because you're pretty good at that already and your gardens are looking like crap.
The other thing, too, that hasn't been picked up anywhere near as much, the only person I've seen covering it of any ilk at all, has been that election scandal based around the Manurewa Marae. It's plenty of people on alternative media and Substack and the like, but very, very little in mainstream. Andrea Vance is about being the only one that stayed on it. This should be huge. Absolutely huge. Mm. If this was a case of a national scandal in the Brethren Church, remember that from a few years back? It was everywhere. It's all you heard about. This, hardly a thing. And we, especially in a contested electorate where there were only 42 votes as a margin, and you've got the head of electors, Carl Lacan, going, oh, sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. It's the bigotry of diminished expectations, just the apathy around all of the nefarious stuff that the Waipariwa Trust is getting up to. I mean, you know, the profit margins of 25% or something like that. The just the gall to pay your directors the just incredibly high salaries.
The highest of any charity organisation in the country.
Still enjoying tax exempt status, and there are hungry people. You know, they're still whining about food banks closing. You could feed a lot of people with that. I think we need to raise the standards that we expect from those Māori leaders who are hiding behind cries of racism when anyone threatens to hold them accountable. And it's probably worth me saying for the 10th time on RCR, what Maori leaders characterize as racism by Pākehā is that actually often the visceral reaction of people with a proud legacy of abolishing slavery and deposing tyrants to being talked to like they're slaves by people who act like they want to be tyrants. You don't, it's nothing to do with your 16th Maori blood or anything like that. It's the way you're talking.
Indeed. So we certainly are not going to let that one go for next year. And I've got here next on the list, memorable media moment of the year. Now, for me, it's probably Shane Curry being so excited that he's never had more news to report about the state of what's going on in New Zealand media in his entire career that he has this year. He's been a busy man. He's had a lot of full pages in that Weekend Herald, is our Shane.
Yeah, just looking into those deep cracks that are forming. And, as I said on Fourth Estate last week, try and discuss it with a minimum of schadenfreude and for me, and it's kind of trivial, but one that really stuck out to me when I thought about that was Lloyd Burr trying to get an eye roll going about VFF from the COVID inquiry chair, Tony Blakely, and being told that actually, they made a lot of good points and they had valid concerns. And that's quite a moment, particularly coming from the man who oversaw some of the worst excesses of authoritarianism in Victoria, and also advised Dear Leader, and was handpicked to deliver some sort of patsy.
Do you think that moment in that interview was his little moment of quiet awakening and rebellion? Because often what I've discovered with some of the stories, that, especially the Maliza Davies stories that I've covered, is that there's a lot of horizontal bullying pressure and policing on people like that. So the pressure placed on Blakely. So he would have happily, I'm sure, gone along with all of those things in Australia and here in New Zealand. He gets appointed to this role with an expectation of how he should be. He's actually gone in and gone through the process and had his eyes opened, but he's not quite fully found his courage muscle yet, but he dipped his toe in the water with Lloyd Burr. Do you see that, or do you see it as something else?
The word for it is he's trying to ameliorate some of the blowback that's coming. And you only need to look at those excess deaths, look at the plunging fertility, look at the turbo cancer. Something's up. He's a public health academic, isn't he? Or an epidemiologist. So he's able to understand statistics. The long COVID's only going to cut it for so long, and the people are going to start turning up with pitchforks and brands. So I think it was I for one welcome our new insect overlords moment. I don't give them that much credit for ticker.
No. The next thing I had on my list was the Kiwi Farm Animal of the Year. Because, I've loved riding Kiwi Farm this year.
It's such a good effort, Marie. I mean, it's sort of something that, if you're doing it in national radio, you'd have three producers, five writers. It's just you, isn't it?
It is all me, and I have to embrace and the lovely Reese, who is our editor, and he is amazing. And I will sometimes put a little note, or I do when I record it, I'll put a voice note, and Reese will come up with the most amazing things. Like when I had this idea to do it like a news story, with American Timey News Story, and we're going to do it like this, circa 1953, that sort of style. Yeah. And he was able to, with AI and everything, make this incredible 4 minutes of gold, which was I'm so very, very lucky. So
we're just at that age where we still remember tuning into national radio and hearing the kids show on the radio.
I know I can.
Yeah. And it's a delightful thing. I used to have, all sorts of story tapes that I used to listen to. And so, it's a great, you're mining a rich seam there.
And, yeah. My so in terms of the animal of the year, I mean, obviously, you know, you've got the key characters, but the one for me I actually wrote down was Darth Prance, who was the Galway sheep. And it's only because I know that Darth, I'm going to be using Darth a lot more next year, I feel. So Darth is going to feature a little bit more. And there's a few other newer characters that I may sort of dig up. In terms of a favourite character, one of the ones that I loved writing the most was actually Glory the Persian Pussy, who was actually found out to be the cat burglar. She was a very, very fun character to write. There was so much more I wanted to do there, but
I mean, Oinky is always entertaining to put together because he does have that porcine porcine shaved.
And then Christopher Luxon will do something in a press release or somewhere, and all I can see is Oinky, this vision of Oinky in my head doing it. So yeah, it certainly does help that he fits the trousers, as it were. So yeah, more, there will be, fear not, there will be no Kiwi Farm today, but there will be more Kiwi Farm next year. The animals are going off and are taking a break, but they will certainly be back.
I'd like to have a minute silent for the innocent, healthy chickens that were sacrificed to our Moloch-like public health officials because some apparently tested positive to having a cold. That's positive, I guess, moving from sacrificing our children as human shields for their boomer grandparents. So, but we need to cut these rituals out altogether.
No, exactly. Yeah. The next one is a very, very broad category, but it's called the 10,000 Spoons When All I Need Is a Knife Award. Thank you, Alanis. Thank you, Alanis. For me, that is any nautical crew who is on a ship that is owned by the taxpayer that happens to have autopilot. Because let's face it, we had a ferry and a very high-profile sinking this year.
You were really defending her as well, weren't you, Busky? It's so good. She's such a good captain.
But the thing is it's the autopilot. She's the boss of the ship, so buck stops with her. But, I mean, ultimately, she wouldn't have been the only person on that bridge who is responsible for looking at that autopilot. So the thing is that really? That's kind of like, you know, I don't know.
It's like that Gary Larson cartoon where the guy is sitting there and he's got a button on his seat, wings stay on, wings fall off.
Yeah, yeah.
What have I got for that?
What did you get?
I sort of thought we could call it the Plato Award. You know, one of the penalties of refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. And I guess the thing I think about is how urgent it is that we purge New Zealand politics of all the managers that, as we spoke about before, where our leaders should be. There is a time for steady as she goes management of the country, but it's not this time. I find a good test of this is to imagine a survival situation, you know, a plane crash in the Andes, a North Carolina flood aftermath. See if you can imagine a single situation where you would choose Chris Hipkins or Christopher Luxon as your leader to get you out of that alive. You know, Chris Hipkins would be crying about some minor discomfort. And you'd be thinking, I bet that soft little bastard tastes like Coke and sausage rolls. And you'd be saying, are you all right, mate? Let's see if we can do something about that pain. We need to probably get all of the politicians who wouldn't go down and speak to the protesters should be gone within one election cycle from now. Mm. They're 10,000 spoons. And still having to see the Woody Allen of New Zealand public health, Michael Baker, still grooming New Zealanders to be scared and take their experimental gene therapy. Ashley Bloomfield and his bloody kindness tour.
And what about Clark Gayford being the producer of Jacinda's documentary?
The hagiography.
It's at Sundance. I mean, really, please.
I mean, you know, all that stuff, I mean, it's being produced by a lady who's a billionaire through, I think, some hotel chain.
Oh, it's the Pritzkers.
Yeah, the Pritzkers. Mm. They're very, very tied in with the Democrat Party. So Jacinda Ardern was, you know, ready with her speech at Kamala Harris's inauguration. So it's been a bit of a damp squib. with her having been thrashed. And the other interesting thing, just to hop all over the place, the audit of Arizona's election in 2020, and the lady saying, we've uncovered substantial election fraud, and it is our recommendation that each electorate be similarly audited. Because, I mean, you know, that extra 15 million votes that appeared and then just didn't appear again.
Mm.
And all the media that gaslit everyone thinking it was weird.
You know, but on that point, I think I had this conversation with Fred. I know we are hopping around everybody, but, you know, it's the end of the year. Is the fact that I actually think that it's not necessarily election fraud is a bad thing. But the fact that there's been a gap in between to actually show people how bad things can actually get under an ideologically driven government, and look at the difference, look at the purpose, the vigour, look at how Trump is already leading in that lame duck. I mean, he's already there. I mean, him and J.D. Vance went to the Army-Navy game. It's a football game. It's a really big deal. And those sorts of events are massive, right? And that sort of patriotism, they're bringing back American patriotism, and you've got a nation and it's people that have been starving for it. And I don't think that would have happened if he'd gone and had a consecutive term. He's had that 4 years to ruminate, let the others really drive things into the ground, and he's literally been able to go, okay, you ready now? You ready for the big guy? Because I'm back, you know, the Trump's back.
Americans, of course, as well as their patriotism, you know, very ostentatiously religious. And, you know, there is a lot of God works in mysterious ways and God wins. And, you know, if he had have won the 2020 election, he didn't have Congress, he didn't have the House. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's much more powerful now. And, yeah, America is a lot more ready to take its medicine. He's a lot less naive than he was going into the 2016. He's not, well, the word is that he's not going to make the same mistakes of allowing those deep state operatives to just carry on doing what they do. So, I mean, it is fascinating. It's a fascinating
Totally fascinating.
Yeah, drones. Totally. Has there been much discussion of the drones in New Zealand media?
They've been, I know News Talk have been covering it. I know there are people, I mean, Paul is all up on it. I just can't help feel that this is one of those social contagion moments.
Yeah, I don't know.
That there is, I don't know, They've questioned Trump on it. He's been briefed on it. He won't talk about what it is, but they obviously, I think, know what it is and who it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think New Jersey was an area that was a drone testing area, so who knows? I mean, it's one of those things where we've seen so clearly that a certain portion of the population are able to be controlled by fear and forced to accept authoritarian rule if you ramp up the fear high enough. Yeah. So it's inconceivable that the fat controllers won't keep pushing that button as long as it gets a response.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So just to round things off, I've made a few notes. I have put down here the elephant or the glaringly obvious that no one can see, and I think we all know what that is. We've talked about it a lot. And I don't want to dive too much into it because it's Christmas, but because it is Christmas, we are getting together with family and friends and communities, and it's the summer as well. If you tend to be more laid back and do the festive season in terms of holidaying and hanging out at home or what have you. And I mentioned it on Sunday night, and I've just written some notes down here around community courage and grace. And I know community is something that you have been very strong on, and I'll get you to talk about that in a minute. But for me, it is what you have mentioned very much, pulling together around those in which you live, those who are your family, those you worship with, those at your school. Actually, essentially getting more involved, I think, we have actually disconnected. We've quietly allowed the state to sneak in and fill those gaps, whether it be local government or national government, to fill those gaps where once the community used to be the ones that would do things. And I think we actually kind of need to take that back a little bit. And your concept that you've discussed many times and has encouraging that. You know, I think by doing things on a micro level, it actually has macro impacts.
Yeah. I mean, I've started to talk more, as you say, about the strategy going forward as well, where we folks who are not so vulnerable to hurting reclaim our rightful niche of calling bullshit on folly. And to do that, we need to deprogram those followers. And a big part of that is delabeling ourselves. So before we get to talk about what needs to be done, you know, we have to say, look, we're absolutely committed to the scientific method. We want to see better outcomes for low-income people, Maori, women, children, the environment. But what the people in power are proposing is going to make things worse. So we want to do what they say they want to do. And I think that that's part of the problem with being so split between left and right, or, you know, more government, less freedom, and less government, more freedom. And that was something that, and I can't remember his name, but it was one of the speakers at NZDSOS was talking about this, and talking about how the nudge units went about it, turning around people's attitudes. And he said, you can disarm people, and you can think about this over Christmas, you can disarm people by putting yourself alongside them, taking yourself out of that oppositional and saying, I understand what you want. I want the same thing.
Yeah.
And then people are receptive, but you can't bludgeon people with facts if they think that you're evil, think that you don't care, think that you're wealthy and you're sorted.
It was one of the things actually that we learned in the conversation sessions that we did with Peter Boghossian the other week, and he talked about that too, and he said one of the biggest tricks, and I think Anthony, one of our listeners, brought this up as well, is actually repeating back to somebody what it is that you think that they had just said. So then that way you make sure that you are actually on the same page, because so often you're not on the same page. What you think that they've said isn't what they've actually said or what they've actually meant. And you're actually able to, and it comes back to like your zipper consensus. You pull everything back to the levels of a discussion or a conversation that you agree on, and then start working your way back up from there again. And I know that there is definitely a lot of awareness, particularly around illnesses and stuff. I've just had a wave of, you know, we've had a bereavement in the family just in recent weeks, and just a wave of illness and, you know, turbo cancers and diagnoses and dementia and all of these things. And it is starting to be noticed. So it's about bringing people to some of these ideas gently. And the neat thing is we've got lots of wonderful conversations here at RCR across the summer that actually can bring people to these ideas gently. And also that courage too, to have some of those conversations and sit down with family members that may have thought that you were definitely part of the tinfoil hat wearing flat earth vitamin C brigade, as a certain leader of the medical council once referred to us as, and actually say to them, look, actually not quite so crazy, are we? And actually, that's all we were saying, is that you don't blindly accept what someone has told you, that actually sometimes you need to dig a little deeper and, you know, do you want me to send you something? It's as simple as that.
I watch the news too. I know your opinions, but I watch some other stuff as well. You know, there was, we weren't going to go so deep over the paper, but, oh man, that Helen Patousis Harris column in yesterday's Herald, just, you can just hear, you can hear the people who would have been sadistic gulag commandants, and Helen Patousis Harris has that just sort of coming out of her pores, this will to authoritarian rule. She talks, conspiracy theories are a major, are another major tool in the propaganda kit. During the pandemic, numerous conspiracy theories misrepresented scientific evidence and the intentions of health authorities and experts. The claim of cover-ups is often the final go-to when there is no other convincing argument. Studies have repeatedly shown how false claims spread across social media platforms. Now, those studies are done by the CIA. and they've developed AI tools to take them out. So then she's saying collaboration between governments, international organizations and tech companies is essential. That's what the CIA is doing, Helen. These stakeholders must work together to detect and limit the spread of harmful content and promote accurate information appropriate to the audience. Right message, right messenger, right platform. Have a read of listen to some of Mike Benz's interviews, and that will put Helen's huffing and puffing in context. And going to Harvard to do the same thing.
Yes, but just how authoritarian that was. I think we've forgotten how to live free. We've actually taken freedom for granted, and actually people are being herded up like sheep, and we're being trucked off to the works, and we need to actually sort of break free. And those, but in terms of the tide, I did say tide coming in or tide going out. I think the tide is now starting to go out. Like people are beginning to wake up. People are beginning to see that the winds of change are blowing, and the presidency in the United States is going to be one of the things that will set an unspoken permission for people to be more courageous about conversations, to actually speak up maybe in work or water cooler meetings when they wouldn't have spoke up to before, say something over that family dinner and share where they would have just let things go to a school meeting and say, you know what, I'm not really particularly happy about this part of the curriculum. Why are you teaching this? What benefit does this have for my child? Whereas before they were just let that go.
What's with the creepy interests in the sexuality of my children? And, you know, but I was rightly Alia pointed out to me when I was saying, you know, that it's time to build more community, that VFF's already doing that. So, you know, go maybe get in touch with your local VFF and you'll meet a lot of people who do have something of a structure.
And like-minded, and also take that and expand it. But the other thing too, and you're right, is grace. I wanted just to bring grace into this picture as well, because when you have been in the situation where you have been portrayed as evil, less than, river of filth, whatever it may be, And you mentioned it before with the media. You know, your human nature wants to look at the Schadenfreude of the whole situation and sort of have a slight gleeful moment. But you do actually have to have a certain element of grace, because people are awakening and starting to see things at different points in the journey and on different spokes of the journey as well. So for many, I've met many parents who have been awakened in terms of the gender war scenario. So, and from that, then they suddenly realize, because that is just a spoke on the critical social justice wheel, right? And all of this comes from this, you know, Franken baby of postmodernism and Marxism.
A whole bunch of French perverts.
Yeah, exactly. So once they start doing that, you've got to have a certain level of grace, because people, it's human nature. You don't want to admit that you've been duped. You don't want to admit that you've actually behaved badly, believing that you were behaving for the greater good.
Yeah, and, I mean, people get post-traumatic stress from encountering evil, and sometimes from encountering evil in themselves. Mm. And certainly, you know, that's often something that soldiers struggle with. But, yeah, I think doing and getting ready for the power to go out for 4 days is always the mental experiment I use. How are you going? What's going to happen to all the food in your freezer? If the water stops running, what happens then?
Well, we lived through that here in Hawke's Bay last year, so I know all about that. And that's when you get to know your neighbours. We've got a great neighbourhood. Now, I'm just aware of time, and I know Paul and Rodney are chomping at the bit to get back to some more talk back and farewell, so we need to get back to them. But I just want to say to everybody, thank you very much for tuning into Media Matters across the year. Marty and I have thoroughly enjoyed bringing this to you.
And good time.
And share. If my one challenge to all of you across the break is pick something that you think is fantastic and share it. If you've got the ability to edit it down and share it on your social, gosh, fill your boots, do that too. Mm. But just pop that out there and just spread the word, because, you know, we're a media company just like everybody else's. We need to keep going, and we do it without the help of the government, without the help of massive corporate interests. We do it purely on your donations. And so we make sure that every single dollar is spent wisely. So we do appreciate your support, and we hope that you all kick back, you get to have some wonderful time and feel empowered and have the sun on your face and just enjoy the summer break. And we will be back in late January. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, have a great break and take care. Take care. Thanks, Marie. Thanks for all you do, and thanks to the team at RCR, the people who work behind the scenes to make everything sound good and go out and be put together. We can't do that without you either. And the foundation members, maybe I did just mention them, but I'll mention them again. Thanks very much. And if you do consider becoming a foundation member, if you can afford it, and if you haven't yet, have a great Christmas.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. And Dave, Paul, Rodney, put those drinks down now. Okay.
We wish you a happy holiday.
Thank you, Helen. And on that note, we'll hand you back to the boys and the team in Queenstown. And Merry Christmas, everyone. And we will catch you again in the new year. Thanks.